Shall we start, Vitali? And all the listeners. It's a new episode, a new day. I'm ditching the
Hello,
intro.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah.
We are an Easter weekend.
We are. And I'm also on my vacation because next week I took 4 days off so I can enjoy and relax a little bit. Do you have any plans for shorter next week, Vitali?
I'm a startup co-founder, so all I do is work.
Oh my god, horrible. Ugh. Well, I will have fun for you as well. Maybe send some pictures so you have a feeling you're there.
What kind of things are you going to be up to?
Some hiking, lots of exercising, a little short trip to Sweden, and who knows, whatever. I will just play by the ear, and whatever happens, it's going to be great. I don't want to plan too much.
It's a fine balance that we must strike when we are vacationing. Some plans, and you know, the kind that you can easily wiggle out of, but not no plans either, because then you can easily just be like, well, I had my vacation time, but all I did was sleep. Which isn't the worst, but still, you know, the balance.
A person like me would be horrible after such vacation, because if I'm not productive in a day, I feel like shit. Something has to happen every day, otherwise, you know, and like the world will end, my life will end. So I hope to, like, if anything, I know that if I don't have plans for the day, I can always go running to the gym, work on my this web shop idea that I'm not gonna go into details right now. We talked about it before, but anyways, something is always like, well, I also need to learn Finnish, so if I'm bored, might as well just learn. So there's always something to do when you're adult. Horrible.
Well, I mean, definitely no one can accuse you of laziness, Antonia. You always have at least 7 different hobbies starting and 3 winding down and 5 that you're actively in.
Something like that. I have to say I heard that several times before in my life. So my therapist says that I don't know how to relax. So... Maybe one day I will learn.
You can take it as a hobby and write a PhD on it.
I would, like, brain not working anymore, relax as a hobby. No, maybe if I win your jackpot, then I would take relaxation as a hobby, primary hobby. But until then, grind.
Oh my god, last week I had a massage because I was in Lapland. I did the 1 week of kind of wilderness skiing.
Yeah. Beautiful pictures.
Thank you. And I'm really looking forward to editing the proper ones in Lightroom and stuff. But like, I went and I had a massage, and like that massage made me realize I need more massages. And then I'm just like, I cannot believe, like, I think I'm willing to take a second job just to get regular massages, because it is so nice. And I'm very jealous of affluent people just from the access that they have to people who can help treat them.
100%, double down, yes. I'm also a big fan of massages, and I have to say I didn't go that much lately. But, you know, when you have your proper spa day, life is 56% better. Just, you know, having a massage and then later, like, nice hot shower, the best. Mm.
We did a little staycation at the Flamingo Spa, and definitely worth it.
Yeah, I should go there again soon. Like, I heard so many people mentioning Flamingo. For international people, like non-Finnish people, it's just like a hotel/spa space. It's pretty cool. I was there like, I think, 3 years ago or something. It was pretty cool. I had like most bizarre experience. I booked for me and my ex-partner. It was like some sort of shell, and inside it was some mud. And then we went into this shell, and then it collapsed on us. And it was like shaking us or whatever. It was bizarre. Wow. It was bizarre. I don't even know like what the fuck was happening. I just
that's like out of an art house movie.
Yeah, I don't know what I booked, to be quite honest. I didn't feel relaxed or anything after. If anything, it was just bizarre. Like, what the fuck happened? I was just shaken in a shell, and now I'm covered with mud. But it was good story.
You know, and I feel like it's a good kind of like also reflection, because one of the topics we want to talk about is like the uncertain times we live in. And it's like, you know, 4 years ago, it would be like, oh, we went to this spa like in Estonia, or we flew to, you know, the coast of Spain for this like week getaway. And now it's like we went for one night in the nearby city for a little spa sauna, because it's like times have been changing.
A bit, yeah. I think everyone noticed that. And shall we maybe mention just like something that was in the news regarding Figma, and then we can go back to all the stuff that's happening around us?
All of it works. I feel like both kind of weave into one another. Yeah. Like everything is a fractal right now. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like how people say, like, you know, everything is politics. I feel like right now everything is a vibe, a certain vibe.
For sure.
And let's get into it, because, yeah, Figma is now doing its IPO, getting ramped up to it, their post-Adobe non-acquisition era. And it feels like they're becoming Adobe a little bit. Like they're doing yeah. some moves that have the whole industry kind of pausing and being like, what are you guys up to?
Yeah, it gives a nick. So what we're talking about is maybe you listeners heard about this. It's Swedish startup, if I'm not mistaken, Lovable. It's a product, like basically you use AI to build products, websites, whatnot. And they introduced a feature they call something in their interface dev mode. And Figma got really angry about it and then sent them a letter that they should stop using dev mode in their product, in their comms, in their marketing, that they should, you know, just purge that. So that's a bit like, okay, a bit icky, like, okay, like Adobe vibes, totally. But maybe you know more about that story. To be quite honest, I just glanced, like, I think at Verge or something, like what happened, and just rolled my eyes.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think, kind of like what you said, they did a trademark claim against Lovable, and apparently, like, this caused people to go, like, so they've trademarked this term? Like, it dev mode supersedes Figma. You know, can something like design view be registered? And then I think they went and they saw that, like, they registered like schema and config, like the name of their event and stuff. So, I mean, I understand, like, we just recently filed for our trademarks for Vandal.
Mm-hmm.
And it can take a little bit of time for that to be registered. But I can understand that we have trademarks, and I can understand Figma being trademarked, but dev mode is part of our industry lingo. It's kind of like if someone tried to register cool vibes, like what's up with that? Like, why? And so I think my fear is that as Figma is growing so big, and like, I mean, they make so much money now and they've grown so large, that if AI puts the squeeze on them and tools like Lovable, Bolt, V0 start eating Figma's lunch and chipping away at their market share, are they going to continue innovating, or are they going to start kind of like running business through legal means, which is like, yeah, pumping their prices up, creating more walls on their like features for higher tiers, and kind of sue people that they feel are not being respectful toward them, type of thing? Like,
I think that's definitely gonna happen that way, because, you know, when you have investors, you always need to grow. There is no point in time in future where your investors, your shareholders will say, okay, we've grown enough, you can just, you know, stay still now and just keep working year over year. There is always this need to grow year over year. That's unsustainable. You can't, like, you will consume the earth. Like, how can you grow indefinitely? That's not physically possible. Even if you compare it with a cancer, once it grows too big, it kills the organism. So if every company needs to grow that much, like, it will just, like, kill us all. I'm being a bit dramatic here, but, like, you know.
But I think, I think also, like, with Figma, because they, you know, Dylan and his, you know, kind of childlike wonder face of like, you know, we are this friendly collaborative tool, and we, you know, empathy driven and this. And it's kind of like that might have been true, but I hope that they realize how much this erodes that brand and the public trust.
But they don't care about that. They have locked in.
And I was getting to that, because I feel like kind of it's kind of like how, you know, sometimes if you like, there's that trope of the very successful person who eventually is just surrounded by yes people, and then they don't even realize the reality of things because they're living in such a bubble. So I don't even know like how much of it is intentional and how much of it is just like this, you know, monster that's growing around the puppy eyes in a way. But I do feel like there's a bit of duplicitousness. I do feel like there's a lot of conscious moves towards a more corporate and ruthless style of business, while using corporate jargon to try to mask it as something acceptable. And that, I feel, is very off-putting.
I will read one comment from The Verge after this news. So one commenter says, "I have been using Figma since day one. Have been a huge evangelist and still love the product. I can take the price hike and limitations on sharing, as I understand that they might need to make more money. But between selling out to Adobe and training their AI on all of our designs, the management can now officially go fuck themselves. This DevMo thing means they are lawyering up, which my gut tells me it's a clear tale for enshittification." And then 100%. And then somebody else like replies on that, "I think the plan to go public is the clearer sign of impending enshittification." We talked about enshittification. Am I saying this correctly? Enshittification.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the natural arc of companies. It's very difficult to avoid. Whether the question is everything from Apple to Uber to name your favorite product, like over time, if the price doesn't go up, and sometimes even when the price goes up, like Netflix and these kind of things, things get worse because the cogs start falling off. And as you said, the line must go up, and that is the only thing that matters currently, unfortunately. Exactly.
And enshittification happens once you reach your limit, like your real limit. Like beyond this, it's just going to be squeezing to the bones and beyond. Because there is, you know, there's not unlimited amount of designers, companies that will use your product. And you, every year you want more from the same customers. It's not enough to pay for 12 euros. Now we are paying 50 and hundreds, like for all these seats and whatnot they're offering there. And they want more. And next year they will want even more. So yeah definitely enshittification. I don't think that Figma will become like even better tool like in future, because it's clear over years that they're not really focusing, not even on designers. I think they are trying to tap into other markets because now they have us, you know, we are locked in. Every company uses Figma, like we need to use this tool no matter what. So they're like, we can get away with a bunch of stuff. Let's get developers on board. I don't think they were very successful in that. I never met a developer that even bothers to turn on dev mode, to be quite honest.
Yeah, let alone stuff like the VS Code plugin. Like, I haven't met anyone who actually uses that.
Yeah, me neither. Like, it's not that I know every developer in this world, but seriously, like, they don't even bother to download Figma client, like, on their Mac. They're just using, like, links from Jira in browser. Or if they're a bit luckier, ones from Linear. And that's it. Like, it's like necessary evil. They just want to get there to see. They don't, like, most of them don't even know that if you hover around, you will see like spacings, and you can, you know, literally look a little bit on the right and then see all the variables I used, which makes it simpler for you to find your own like tokens, variables in your code. So they don't like, I think Figma.
I think one really interesting thing, because as you mentioned, like Lovable is from Sweden. And now with all of this tariff madness and the way that the world is seismically shifting into something new that no one really knows exactly what it's going to be, I think that there's a strong desire in the market that maybe wasn't there before about kind of looking where is the service or software from. Like, I've seen on LinkedIn people saying like, hey, what would be like a European version of AWS? And I think people are going to start asking like, is there a European alternative to Figma? And I think also along with that, do we even need Figma in the age of AI tools, you know? And like, how much should we be designing from initial wireframe sketches immediately into front-end code to make the process as seamless as possible? Like, I think that no designer wants to get rid of the infinite canvas and the kind of flexibility and freedom. But when we have tools like Framer showing us that, like, actually you can have infinite canvas and make front-end code at the same time, I think, you know, if I would be part of, like, the Penpot initiative, like, I would try to, like, Figmify further and put all the kind of, like, resourcing I can to kind of do what Blender did in a much faster accelerated timescale. Because I feel like Penpot is, like, 70% of the way there that it could start to be used, but it really requires, like, a lot of fine-tuning and polish to get to the point where I think, like, people would start to mass adopt it. But I feel like this open source movement, there's a lot of potential to kind of usurp the main functionality of Figma. Because as we all remember, like, Figma started very simple. Yep. It was, and that was the beauty of it. And I don't think we would be so, like, have such a loss if we didn't have dev mode. But if we have annotations, if we're able to kind of create some sort of documentation and easily link it and these types of things, like, and with the rise of AI tool capabilities, like, I feel like a three-person team could, like, kind of build a basic version of Figma in a few months even. And of course, like, it would be behind Penpot initially from where they would start. But, like, I feel like there's never been a better time for Figma to have a true competitor than today. And also, like, its relevance and significance is diminishing month by month.
You know what? If some investor is listening right now, can you give us, like, $1 million or something? Watch this idea. You and I could pull this off. So, imagine a design tool, which is voice / hand operated. So, right now, like, Figma is focusing a lot on React. Yeah, sure, React is very popular. Not every app is React app. Some apps are React Native, some apps are Swift, some apps are Kotlin, some apps are Unity. For example, I work with Unity. Support is non-existent. It's horrible. So imagine if you can, you know, create a new file, like, you name it, and you select technology you are working with, and then you're given a set of tools that help you deal with that technology. Because if you only focus on React, then me, as somebody who needs design for Unity stuff, has nothing. Like, I work, like, it's, I can't believe that it's so unsupported. Like, this collaboration is almost, like, non-existent between those two tools. Mm. And then imagine this, like, what I hate is, like, okay, I need to create permutations of a list of, like, this view. Like, it's not, like, I have data. Okay, I pulled some data from different sources, so I know why churn might be happening on this view or in this funnel, for example. So I want to create, like, a few permutations of, like, the same view that's problematic. Maybe sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's like, I don't know what we should tweak to kind of make it better. But, like, doing manually, like, changing auto layout direction or making it wrap, like, why am I doing this manually? Like, why can't I just, like, push a button and say, please make me 3 different versions of it. I want first list to be simple, second one to be more visual, and third one to be, like, some sort of hybrid, and also I want 2 columns. And then it just, you know, happens.
Mm.
Imagine that kind of tool. And also, if you can just tell it, like, I know that Figma is working on it, and it's, I don't see it, like, where can I, like, make me components, and then it will, like, something.
Mm.
We don't have that right now. Maybe enterprise tier has it. I didn't check or had access to enterprise tier, but wouldn't it be cool to, you know, have a starter design system? You, like, adapt colors a little bit for your brand. Maybe, you know, I want tighter buttons. I like it tighter, or make it gigantic. I want rectangular, like, make border radius, like, full, so, like, they're, like, rounded. And then from this components file, you know, it would always, like, suck in whatever is available to kind of make these designs.
Mm.
Why is that, like, not a thing still in design world? Beats me. But I would be willing to take the challenge and make a tool that's like that if somebody would give me $1 million. So just putting it there.
Yeah, I feel like the closest we have to that right now is like Bolt and V0 and these types of tools that just do it in code. But yeah, those are also React specific.
Exactly.
So it's a very good point, because also like in React Native, we've only recently gotten support for linear gradients and strokes, like for Android and iOS. Like there are so many technical limitations that easily get overlooked, and then we spend a lot of time as designers creating things that cannot be translated into the product. And I feel like this is the bane of a lot of teams. And of course, like, oh, what a world it would be if designers and developers were forced to be, you know, like glued by the hip together, working and really supporting one another. But I feel, again, like we're going into this era where everything is merging into something new in a way. Like, of course, we'll always have our specializations. Like, if you're someone who is excellent at creating like React Native interactions, I think that it's a very good thing to have as a skill, like a specialty. But at the same time, I feel it's more and more important for you to be able to articulate the value of that to business units and to work tightly with your teams to create kind of meaningful impact with that work and that specialty that you have. And I feel like with, like, there was this big news thing now that the Shopify CEO was like, we're not hiring until you can justify to me why AI can't do that job. And I feel like in one way or another, this is a trend that will get more and more popular, because the amount of jobs out there is diminishing.
Yep.
There's so many people that I know personally who are amazingly talented people who are struggling to find work. And it might be, you know, because they have a specific niche of skill, but generally these are people I'd say who have a more like general skill set and perhaps haven't created the portfolio or the messaging of what they offer, that how they bring that business value. And this is something that we've talked about in previous episodes, but kind of it feels more and more relevant to say that you need to be able to really connect the dots and not just talk about what you do, but rather what outcomes your work helps facilitate.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how does your work help somebody else's business? Like, how will you enrich that? How will you bring that value to shareholders? Yeah, I mean, storytelling is a skill that's often forgotten. These, like, hard skills are getting very cheap these days. I mean, just yesterday I prototyped a website that would take, like, before, somebody would think, oh, I need to hire a developer, like first a designer to like make a vision and then developer to code it. I spent an hour just like screaming and I was just like talking with my computer and boom, it's already like I have a domain, it's already out. Like I'm trying to like, you know what I'm doing right now? I'm not even trying to use ready-made services. I'm just trying to use Cursor to make me code like webhooks and everything to avoid paying all like Shopify and all these services. And that's possible. So, yeah, I don't know. Like every time we talk about AI stuff, like I know that some people are worried, oh, it will take our jobs. So, yeah. And then somebody else will say, but those people who know how to use these tools will become even more valuable. But is it going to happen that, I don't know, like what happens?
Well, I think that people really like, it's hard for us to imagine scale, right? Like what was it? Something like a million seconds is 4 days and a billion seconds is 11 months.
I have no idea. You know,
but like, because I found this thing called peachcalendar.app, and there you, it's actually like you can go to this fcksubscription.com, and it's one dude and he's built a bunch of little tools like this Peach Calendar. It replaces Calendly, and so instead of paying a company $144 a year, his pitch is pay me $20 once and you have a Calendly alternative that'll help you book your calendars and it syncs and it gives you, you know, like it doesn't have all of the features of Calendly, but if you're an individual, a solo person and you need just a few of its features, then this is a way that you pay it once and you pay like a fraction of what you would pay annually and you pay it once. And so, you know, this isn't going to put Calendly out of business, But it'll probably, you know, especially with the four tools that this guy has made, like for Trello and Linktree and Typeform alternatives, it'll make him enough money to kind of like create his next venture. And maybe even one of those might become something that is more profitable and kind of has a virality to it. But the point of it is that I feel in the future, we'll have much more microservices. Like, of course, we'll have big dogs that take the majority of the pie, but 1% of that pie is a massive slice for small teams and individuals. And so I think that we can sometimes kind of, it's hard to predict the future, if not downright impossible. But what I feel is happening is that we are less constrained with how things are in a way. Because, okay, previously, if you wanted to build a Figma or a Trello, inevitably, unless you were extremely talented unicorn person, you would need to at least find one other person. And then it would take you months of hard, dedicated work. But now I feel like the iteration cycles are so much faster. And as an individual, you're able to do so much more that then it becomes more of a challenge of just to say, like, where should I put my time? What is the thing that I should do? But at the same time, like what you were saying about this site that you coughed up in an hour yesterday on a whim, like it's so much faster to prototype and it's so much easier to make really rich prototypes. So I don't know where it's going to lead to, but I do feel like there is the foundations have been shook. It's kind of like the advent of the App Store. I feel like we're at a precipice moment, kind of globally, and especially as an industry in IT, that things are shifting, things are changing, and no one exactly knows why or how. But I do feel that as an individual, if you have a vision, you have the best possibility of making something happen with it. But I feel also like at the same time, we should rush less into creating things and more creating audiences or communities and talking with people and understanding their needs, because then, again, like good design, we don't create solutions looking for problems, but rather we identify a problem in a niche community and we build something that that community is willing to pay for.
Yeah, that's what I'm having problem with, because now it's all grind hustling. You need to think, oh my God, I have 35 AI tools that I need to use. I need to, you know, create some product that will allow me some income in future, because we will all be redundant in, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. And there will be just one person, you know, playing with like orchestrating dolls like this and running a billion dollar company. Sorry, that's a mastermind that's like hooked up on Monster Energy drink and just never sleeping. I don't want to be that person. I also want to, you know, have my free time and exercise and learn Finnish and enjoy sun. Maybe even travel a little bit to see the world, make new friends, reconnect with the old ones. You know, have a family. You know, I don't want my life to be in front of computer, because otherwise I'm homeless. Like that's what I'm having issue with. And right now it's like, oh, everyone should be like indie producer to kind of secure their future a bit better, yada, yada. Right now I still have drive and energy to do that. This is why I'm doing this right now. But, you know, in 10 years, both of us might be a little bit tired of that. And, you know, I want to take it like a bit easier. We're going to be like deep in 40s, closing to 50. And who knows, like how we're going to feel about IT, how world is going to look and yada, yada. But like this need, oh, like now is the best time to like build your company. Maybe some people don't want to do that. Maybe they just want to like, you know, do a contribution in whatever form from 9 to 5 or whatever and go home. Do we all need to be entrepreneurs? Probably not.
No, definitely not. But the thing is unfortunately, it feels like the world we live in is more and more hostile to that.
Yeah.
And I feel that the only way that we can get out of this mess is with universal basic income.
Yeah.
Like if we don't pay people just for existing, we are going to be in the most turbulent of times. Like it's kind of dystopian. Like we'll have people who are extremely ridiculously affluent, like we already do now, and then we'll have an upper class, and then we'll have everyone else. Like there will be no middle class. And that's a frightening thought. And for me, like, I'm just saying that, like, kind of thinking about our audience and kind of like the topics that we're discussing, I just feel that the main thing is to be curious. Like, I feel for me, like, a challenge that I set for myself is like, how can I integrate, you know, 'cause I'm a very curious person. I love learning. I'm all the time looking at these things. And it's kind of like, I think we all owe ourselves the favor of not feeling that we are pushed to it, that like, yeah, if I don't learn this new tool, I'm going to be screwed. Like, nothing good comes from that mindset. And the world is built to put you in that mindset. And so it's like one Buddhist monk once said, you know, the secret to life is to bear the unbearable with a smile. And it's a high, tall order. It's a very difficult, unreasonable thing to ask from anybody.
Yeah.
But I feel in a way like, you know, we have this ride. We know tomorrow is not promised. We don't know what will be. So definitely try to live every day that you're not sacrificing tomorrow for it. But at the same time, I know that there are times like, I mean, I spent February and March. I had only 2 weekends. Like I really doubled down and grew as a professional because I was doing things that I hadn't done before. And it was very rewarding and I knew exactly why I was doing it and I had an exit strategy. The problem is that those kind of things can easily become the new normal and then you become a husk of who you once were.
Yeah.
So definitely you have to take care of yourself. You have to be mindful. But if you think that you can just do what you're doing now and you'll be safe, I don't feel like that's a very valid strategy. Like,
yeah,
the train is coming and everything is being usurped in one way or another. But I'm the kind of person who feels that society should be about creating safety nets and taking care of those who are in the flux of it. Like in economy, there is the term natural unemployment that like, even if you optimize everything in every society, there tends to be 10% of people unemployed at any given time. So you can't like the idea that we need to all be individuals when we're talking about systemic issues doesn't seem reasonable or realistic to me. And not the best strategy. Like, I believe in progressive taxation. I believe that we should avoid regressive taxation, that, you know, taxes that hit the poor more than the affluent. But like VAT is something that's a regressive tax. The poor pay much more because after a certain point, if you have, you know, 2 billion or even 2 million, it's very hard to have a grocery bill or like to buy so much that percentually you will be paying as much as someone who just makes 30,000 a year.
Exactly.
So like, well, I, you know, we're not an economics podcast, so I don't want to get too much deep into it. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that anytime when you look at a society and they've been kind of growing and they have a thriving middle class and they're investing in infrastructure and all of this, they've done the best. And the only way that's ever been possible is that you make the people who have the most pay the most. Like in the US in the 50s, they had a 90% tax rate on everyone who made, I think, above or all wealth that was above like a few million. 90%. And they built the post-World War II world and all the affluence and abundance that came with it. But then people got tired of it and then they started dismantling it. And then Reagan came in. Well, you know, you can always check on YouTube. There's a lot of great history documentaries, and I recommend Gary's Economics to everyone. Gary Stevenson, a real personal hero of mine, someone who was a stock trader, is a millionaire, but spending his time talking about tax wealth, not work. And I feel like that those types of messages need to get out there more and more, just for people to understand that, like, if we all look after ourselves, there'll be no one to help anyone, and we will all suffer from it.
All well said, yeah. We should be lucky that we live in Finland for the time being, it feels to me.
Yeah, but it's the Americanization of Finland.
Oh,
as
yeah,
well.
Like, yeah, it's happening already. I can see it. I rant about it all the time, like when conversation with friends kind of drives into that avenue. What I wanted to say was, now with these tariffs, right now they're like for physical goods, but are they also for digital goods? That's one thing that I'm not sure. Because
currently, like from what I understand, is that actually like it's all been a lot of hot air, and now the tariffs have been canceled on everyone except China. for now. And then I read something that they're like coming close to having a like zero tariff deal between the US and EU. But the fact of the matter is that like world economies and commerce is based on consistency and predictability. And that has been thrown out of the door. And I feel like there's a monumental shift happening now away from the US. I think everyone is globally shunning the US and they're kind of tired of it because also there's no guarantee that when the next president comes in that things will hold. And currently, like with this fucking president, like that even tomorrow will be the same plan as today. Like, because now, like, oh, we want people to build factories in the US. Like, how? How is what is happening currently now incentivizing anybody to build anything in the US? Because, like, maybe in a week he's going to say, or in a year once the factory is half built, like, actually, now we're going to take your factories and no foreign companies can own anything in the US. So, like, there's no guarantees about anything. And that is causing a huge meltdown of value. Like, we lost a sixth of the entire stock market value. We went from $6 trillion to $5 trillion. Something like that, like, or I don't remember the numbers, but all I know is that this has been a self-inflicted wound. Unlike the financial crisis, unlike COVID, this was premeditated and completely self-inflicted. And the only people who seem to be benefiting from this are the strongest authoritarian regimes. You know, we have Russia and China, happy as hell. You know, all the vacuums that are being left behind by the U.S. are being flooded by those parties. And I, you know, can you blame them? Like South Korea and Japan, they were so intertwined with their economies into the US. And now the US is like, screw you. Like they, like the amount of damage those tariffs would have done on like Southeast Asian economies and Japan is enormous. And we have to remember that after World War II, like Japan, their constitution forbids them from having a military. And it's all about, okay, the US will protect them no matter what. Now the message is, we ain't going to protect you for shit. So yeah, like the amount of changes we're about to see is immeasurable.
Yeah. And also, like, I'm thinking also in the terms of Europe and what it means for us. I mean, we had like a rude wake-up call 3 years ago, or was it? I think it was 3 years ago already, when Russia started war with Ukraine. That was like, whoa, we have war in Europe again. Oh my God, we need to scramble now. We need to send money and help. And okay, US is now helping, but now US won't help. Now only Europe is willing to help. Only these countries want to help. These countries are against it. People are like, All these things that Europe didn't see for very many decades, like, came to table once again. Mm-hmm. And now another hit in European face is like, hey, US actually hates us. And now we're supposed to do something as a whole continent to be less reliant on everyone around us. So it's happening mm-hmm. like in mere years. Maybe the good thing from it is, yeah, maybe the decade will be very hard. A lot of people will struggle, but maybe Europe will finally, you know, get its shit together and start using, you know, internal resources to become sustainable and not rely on others that much. Maybe that's a good thing long run. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm not a prophet. I was reading some article. Every day when I wake up, I read a few articles from my favorite Croatian website, news portal. And sometimes they have like clickbaity titles, but sometimes they have like offer like really good analysis of things, like shockingly good. And I was just reading the other day about some sort of projection algorithm or something called World 3. I don't know much about it. I skimmed through the article. I didn't have much time. But it was basically how back in, I don't know, 70s or something, I don't know, it was like a long time ago, like scientists or whoever, they made like this projection how world is gonna be if we do nothing, and it just goes like as things are going. And basically the point of the article was, after 2030s, there's gonna be a huge shift in whole world, something bad will happen, because this is kind of the threshold threshold, like where everything breaks, you know, it's unsustainable to just go and, you know, not deal with issues you're doing along the way. And how pretty much we are on point, you know, we are aiming that direction. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, why am I reading this shit? Like now I feel even more anxious. So yeah, I don't know. What was my point? Yeah, Europe.
Yeah. And the thing is that like, with the tariffs on digital goods, like, I mean, like India and some African countries, they have like the Netflix tax.
Oh,
you know, like, so they like kind of charge extra for foreign digital services. And I mean, if you look at like the App Store and Google Play Store, I mean, they have different tax rates depending on the country. And yeah, I mean, I feel the same with you in the sense that like, I really hope that this leads to a stronger, more unified European Union that is more cohesive and strong. And I feel like no matter what, there's going to be pain. And that's the unfortunate thing, you know, like these policies hurt people, and the economic uncertainty that we're facing is really like, I think we all know at least one person who's been directly affected by being laid off or not having access to some benefit that they used to have access to. And so I really hope that, kind of like what I was saying at that episode we recorded at the library, that, you know, in times of uncertainty and turmoil, these more progressive, more liberal theories and concepts have a better chance of being implemented. And I really hope that people, because yeah, we have to remember, like, we didn't have weekends and 9-to-5s naturally. These things, people revolted and some even died for those things. And I think that, you know, we don't have to die. And we have to remember that it only takes 3.5 people to nonviolently protest for change to happen. Like, when it's been studied in sociology, every single time when just 3.5% of the total population nonviolently protest, change always happens. It doesn't take half of us. It doesn't even need 10% of us. It just needs 3.5% of the population.
Hopefully, we will get to the point where some good change will be implemented. I don't have all the answers. I have a lot of opinions and thoughts and worries, but... yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's okay to like just discuss and think about it, even though like we are like design podcast and all of that. But like, I bet everyone is worrying about the same things. Like, what about my job security? What about my future job? Am I in a right career path? Like, should I study something new? Obviously, we don't have concrete answers for everything. I feel very sad for young people who are just starting off, because AI is much better than them and companies really love to keep their expenses low. So having a little agent replaces any junior easily. And they can work 0-24. So like, it's really hard to get into the industry right now. I'm not so worried about designers though. I think design tools are very like... far from getting hijacked with the AI and stuff like that. And those that I use so far has been really crappy. But front-end developers, however, I would be a bit worried, because one technical designer, like one person who really likes all this like techy stuff and knows how like coding might work, maybe tried once or twice by themselves, they can totally like do a lot of damage, so to say. In front end as well. Like, imagine envisioning something, like you have like a whole story, and then you can actually produce it in like actual app. I mean, that's a completely new value. So I don't know, maybe designers will have to argue that we are most valuable piece in the I don't know, cog that we call a company, IT company. I don't know. Let's see. But, you know, if everything goes wrong with the IT, like to the point where very few of us are actually employed and actually doing something. I mean, there is like plumbing, welding, you know, putting ceramics around. I think those are great jobs. And, you know, maybe something to think about.
No, but, you know, my body is shaped like a L from all the sitting. No, I think, you know, we don't have a bunch of unemployed horse riders around, like the only constant is change. And I do feel like my dream, like Vitaly's dream, we can put a little heading on that, right? We have universal basic income. People Ooh. Don't have to struggle anymore to pay rent and to eat. Shocking. So wild. I'm obviously a commie. and this allows then people to actually talk to their neighbors, maybe have local community programs that they're running of like, you know, hey, I think that people should do mindfulness. Like I did 5 years of therapy and it taught me so much about myself. And I found how much, you know, calm breathing can help relax and heal trauma. Maybe I should run a workshop about this. Well, let me spread, you know, in my neighborhood, a flyer or kind of like talk in the local bulletin page of like, hey, I'm doing this thing. And I have this time, this freedom to think about it as I'm sipping my tea in the morning and looking out of my window, breathing calmly because I don't have, you know, 5 invoices that are going into that are going to put me into minus, you know, like the difference that it can make. And this is the kind of thing that then I think will lead to kind of a collective healing, that people have time to actually network and to talk to one another. Because now I think the one of the saddest things is how the screws are being tightened on everyone, is that we're not going so much to concerts, we're not going out for drinks or coffees and yeah. seeing people and doing things, because we don't have time and we can't afford it anymore in the same way.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And the cascading effects of all of that is really terrible.
Yeah, like when you say cascading effect, that's it. Like, you're tightening the bolts, like people have less and less. And then you, next year, your shareholders want you to take even more from people who already don't have. So of course, at one point, like you will start failing year over year. You will fail because there is nothing more to take. You have taken everything. And then what happens? What did you accomplish? Nothing. You will.
No, and then and it shows how out of touch, because like media is like, in the US, I was laughing about this. Someone shared it on Reddit where they're like, you know, people like this one habit from workers is killing the restaurant business. And it's like people bringing lunch from home rather than going out to eat. And it's like, how are you not seeing it? How are you thinking about it this way? Like maybe people would want to eat out, but the prices are exorbitant and they have no money to spend. Like, come on.
Like, what the fuck is this? Yeah, I mean...
But, you know, let them eat cake.
Exactly. My namesake said it correct.
Mm-hmm. So, also, like, one thing that is a really good term, and it's a great documentary that you can freely watch on YouTube by Adam Curtis called Hypernormalization. And I think that we're in a period where we all feel like the systems have failed us. Things are absolutely wild, but we all carry on as normal because no one knows what the alternative is. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows something is not right, and we feel that things are not staying the same, but we have no course of action except to go along. And I mean, in the Soviet Union, this happened for 30 years, 20 years at least, before the dam broke, because like in the late 60s and in the 70s, like the system was over. Like, the experiment had failed, but we underestimate how long you can keep squeezing juice out of a fruit even after it's turned into a raisin. and I think that like we need to really try our best to use our voice, because you know, it's like if there's a protest happening, you know, after work, don't go straight home, go there just for a little bit, show up. If you see a clip that you feel kind of talks about the things that you feel people should be talking about, just share it on your story. Like people talk down on this, but it's like, okay, you know, don't think that you're changing the world. But if you do zero, absolutely nothing, if you're so afraid of showing up and using your voice, then that silence is complacence, and that complacence makes the thing last longer. So I think if all of us really used our voice, things would happen faster.
And this is how Vitaly gets to 3.5% to start protests.
I'm doing my part.
Yeah. No. Well, you are doing your part. I'm watching your reels, and they're always like very interesting. Like most of the people that I follow on Instagram, I mean, most of them are just showing how amazing life they have, how great friends they have, how great partners they have, and how their life is just one big freaking fun. But you often like share something like oh, interesting. Like I often find myself like reading the quotes or something like, yeah, I agree with that. Like, you know, it helps with reflecting. So yeah, maybe you should lead the way, Vitaly. You should go into politics. Yeah. Let's go into politics.
Well, you know, I had this really nice thought, not relating to politics, but because I do like to share these kind of advice quotes and thought-provoking things. And I was like, you know, I should start recording myself saying these things and then posting that rather than reposting these texts. And maybe that way kind of like putting my face out there a bit more. But it's easy to have excuses why we're too busy and it can't work. But I'm really happy that, for example, we're recording this and video. So, you know, because there's a million reasons why we could have said, no, let's not do it. But hey, here we are.
I tried. I tried to get away from it. I'm like, I don't look good. But I'm like, why do I care if somebody thinks I'm ugly and unpresentable? That's their problem. I have incoming call, but unfortunately I can't take it now, so I will decline because we are still not done with the episode.
Well, what we did plan is to give a few ideas to people to check out some tools. So, Antonia, what are some tools that you have recently found that you find interesting?
Okay. So one tool that I'm obsessing over is called Aqua Voice. It's not really private, like when you say something to this like widget on your computer, they will send it to their cloud and like process it a little bit. So I maybe wouldn't share like most sensitive information ever, but it's extremely helpful for like this tedious, boring, stupid stuff that you do over and over on a computer. Like if you need to, I don't know, wipe code or something, you know, it's just a one press away for recording your voice and having it instantaneously appear in, you know, this input field. Saves time, you get more time. You can either choose to work more on or be done earlier to enjoy life. So I think I will even pay for this app. I think it's $8 per month or something. That's like, I'm not usually so obsessed with the apps once I discover something, but this one, you know, they promised we are the fastest on the market. I'm like, yeah, sure you are. Let's download this motherfucking try. And I was like, whoa, I love this tool. So this is like one thing that I'm obsessing over. From the other tools, I don't think I stumbled upon anything worth mentioning. I've been browsing Product Hunt a little bit, but yeah, I didn't see anything that was like, aww. How about you?
Well, I mean, for me, one thing that I've really been excited to kind of dive deeper into is this Manus, which has been around now for a little bit. I've seen it quite frequently being brought up in different YouTube podcasts and videos, but it's basically like an agentic service. So instead of just kind of having a chat GPT LLM, it actually runs on a virtual computer. So you can ask it to, for example, research best laptop deals in your city and compiling the main information with links and images and whatever else that you might want into, like, let's say an Excel sheet or a Notion document. And it's able to do that stuff. It teaches itself how to work. So much more dynamic than like a Python script that you would normally code by yourself or whatnot. Like, I haven't tried it enough to really kind of give my verdict on it, but I just love the idea of this type of assistant that can do more than just give me text outputs.
That reminded me of one reel, one photo I have been seeing on Instagram quite a lot. It appears on my feed, you know, several times per year. It's something like, I wish AI would help me with I don't know, you know, all this nasty stuff that we do, so I can enjoy my life more. I don't know. I wish it would, like, I don't know, clean for me, or I don't know, like something that's like super, super useful and it's time consuming. But how does it go? I can't remember the exact words. But it's like other way around. Like I feel it goes something like, I wish AI would help me with like non-creative tasks so I could be creative in my free time, but now it's being creative and while I'm like, you know, doing all the nasty stuff, like so I wish this agent AIs would I don't know, clean the apartment, wash the dishes, and stuff like that, so I could think more, but.
Well, this is an interesting question, Antonia. Would you jump at the opportunity if it was an affordable thing to have a robot in your house doing
Yes,
those things?
I would
Really?
have a fucking robot in my house, and we would sleep together in bed.
Wow.
And we would cuddle, and we would spoon in the night. Sometimes I would be the big spoon, sometimes the robot would be the big spoon. The big spoon, so sometimes I want to.
I don't know. I would wait at least 5 generations, and even then I would be like very hesitant. Like, I don't know, something about it just seems to me like I'm very adamant. Like I don't even have a robot vacuum cleaner, you know?
Hey, don't say it out loud. It will hear you. My robo is nice. It cleans my floor. I never had cleaner floors in my life. But why? Like, do you think that the robot will kill you, like, while you sleep or something?
No, I don't think it's that strong. Like, and with the robo vacuum, it's just like hard to justify the investment. But with the humanoid robot in my house, like I feel like I don't know. It feels weird, and I don't. I can't feel like I would trust it to cook or navigate in my apartment without breaking things or frustrating me. You know, like somehow taking up that space, and who knows, maybe one day I wake up and I look at it and its eyes turn red and then it does try to kill me.
I mean, if we assume that the robot will not destroy your apartment because it's a half-baked startup from Silicon Valley that overpromised and underdelivered, so if I would have like a Joan the robot just like walking around and like cleaning my kitchen right now, or putting together sofa or cleaning sofa, I don't mind. And you know what? I don't like being alone. It would be nice to have robot that I would, hey, I'm feeling a little bit anxious today. Like, can I talk? Can I vent for a bit with you? And then it would pretend to be a therapist and I would feel better because now I do it with my phone. And then I would say, hey, can you also change linen on bed? I think it's dirty. Just do it. And also wash laundry after that. Yes, ma'am. And then, doo-doo-doo. I would love that. What's wrong with that?
No, it's often not the vision that's wrong, you know? So after, let's say, a year of you having that successfully work, I would bite the bullet. I'd be like, okay, it's working for Antonia. I'm getting a lot of, but I wouldn't be the first one,
I
and I
would
wouldn't
be.
want the first generation.
I would take
Exactly.
the
I think
first
that's the
generation.
difference.
I will be the tester. If I survive, yes, I will tell you honestly. You can take it. It works. It changed my life. I spend more time with my family. I soak up the sun every day. I think a lot more. I'm not anxious anymore. And apartment is clean. Food is cooked. My nutrients are just like skyrocketing. My body is healthy. I mean, I can only see like positive sides. But if that robot tries to attack me, I have black belt. I could defend myself. Just bad robot. No
Wow.
electricity for you.
Well, that took a turn. You know, we were in this like utopia with like this beautiful harmony, and then suddenly it's like, this is how I will destroy it and prevent the robot
With
uprising.
baseball bat. No, bad robot. I will not use you. Okay, back. I'm gonna just use the dishwasher because that works. That kinda that doesn't attack me or kill me. So, I think Terminator movies traumatized us because I don't know.
Well, there's a really good British sci-fi movie called Attack on the Block, which was the first movie with John Boyega, who was in the Star Wars movies and stuff. And it's the story premise basically is like, what if aliens attacked an urban environment, like, you know, where there's like a lot of like homes and housing project, and then like how they would like kind of combat the aliens. And it was a very entertaining, well-made movie. Can recommend.
If you can send me the link to IMDb or something so I can have a reference to it, otherwise I will not remember because my memory is gone. It's absolutely gone. I realize that my memory is not doing great. The other day I was thinking, what is the name of this person that I was hanging like 4 years ago? And I couldn't remember. And for me, like remembering names and last names and faces was no issue. And I couldn't remember something like that. And when I remember, wait, in primary school, what were the kids that I used to go to school with? Up until now, I could remember everybody's name. Now I'm like, I don't remember actually anymore. Aging. Horrible! Well, I hope somebody will, maybe Boston Dynamics, what's their name? With the robot, yeah. Maybe they will come up with some ChatGPT robot that will do the linen change and dishes for me. I'm super happy to try it out. But yeah, in the meantime, I think those are our thoughts for this month. Hopefully we will find more time to record this podcast. And I will just
and please let us know, was the video good?
Oh yeah, we have tell us about the video stuff. Yeah, that would be cool. It's exciting. Should I also put it on my YouTube channel, like the video?
Why not?
I can try. Maybe this will revive my YouTube channel that's like slowly dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to try this Opus clip that I've been using now on our startup to get some shorts. So then you can plug those into your channel too.
I want to try that. Look at us content creators. Anyways, if you have something to wrap it up with, mic is yours. You can sign us off.
Shit's crazy, yo. Keep trying stuff. Take care of yourself. And remember to hydrate.
Not with energy drinks. Ciao, Skip.